This evening, we're going to be looking at some of the reasons why we may lose the young. From Ecclesiastes, the 12th chapter, first verse, the writer says, "Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and the years draw near when you will say, 'I have no delight in them.'" Just for Don, I understand from my previous studies that word creator there is actually plural. Remember your creators in the days of your youth. That and the fact that about Ecclesiastes, it's a book that kind of lays out life as an explanation to the young of what to pursue, what to focus on. As you get into like the second and third chapters, it's telling you about life, you know, that where many people get caught up in things and pursuits and building whatever. If God is not a part of it, it's all for nothing. And really the book of the wisdom literature, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon, are books written primarily for the young. Proverbs, first 10 chapters, is a man sitting down with his son and trying to give him the facts of life and what to be aware of. So we're going to be looking at some things, for the youth to consider, and also, their parents. Today, more and more parents are brokenhearted over the loss of their children to cults or drugs or just to the world. These are might even be lost from service to the Lord. Many churches lose more than half of their young people, and not just from moving away to go to school or into the service or to take a job in another area. This is the loss of the next generation of capable young adults, not interested in the things of the Lord, but more in the things of the world. What is causing such a falling away with a dropping out from the future of the church? What is bringing about such apathy for spiritual life and heavenly perspectives? How can so many of our youth raised in Christian homes leave without ever looking back at the things of God? We're going to consider some of the reasons. One of them might be a lack of proper teaching. This is sort of a light bulb moment. The children are not going to know anything about spiritual things unless someone teaches them. And the best persons to do that are their parents. This is the way God set it up, Deuteronomy 6, 4 through 9. We've kind of fallen into a cultural thrust or goal of things, of allowing the schools to raise our children. And one of the things, I read several years ago, when they were considering, how do we get our country back? And one of the things that was suggested as a solution is to start homeschooling again. Public schools are a relatively new concept. Most of the children of America for 100 and some odd years were raised in homeschooling. And the kids didn't do too bad. Most of our founding fathers were homeschooled. They didn't have, educational systems. The old stories of Lincoln, in his log cabin, doing his homework on the back of a shovel. Not too far off. Jefferson was homeschooled and self-taught. He learned seven languages teaching himself. They were motivated. They weren't sidetracked. They knew what they were doing, and it didn't fail them. I recall one story about the Japanese that were kind of poo-pooing homeschooling, but then a disaster struck, and the schools were all demolished, and they went to some English lady, wife, because she was homeschooling her children, and asked her to set up a whole system, for the Japanese on homeschooling. So it's one of those things that don't turn your time and your child over to the school system where more and more it is the object of our leaders in order to run this nation more or less like a Nazi youth camp. I mean, that was one of the statements of Hillary Clinton. You know, it's like that she preferred that the state raise our children. And that's the way this place is going unless, you know, we do something about it. In Romans 10, 13 through 14, you know, back to the question, where it says, whoever will call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. Okay. But how do you get to that point? It goes on to say, how then shall they call upon him in whom they have not believed? And how can how do they believe in him if they had not heard? Or how can they hear without a preacher or a teacher or whatever in the instances, you know, God sent out apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, all that kind of stuff for building up of a church. And this is one of the things we have to consider about the kids. Get them ingrained early. Their faith will come from hearing God's word, you know, especially from somebody they trust, like their parents, hopefully. Further, the more of an ingrained habit the involvement in the work of the Lord a child has, the more it will seem strange to him if he does not do it. I mean, it's just natural. It becomes second nature. That's what they've been taught. I can remember the first time I went in the service. It was just, you know, being in boot camp. It's the first time I ever missed a Sunday. And it just felt weird. You know, it's Sunday, you go worship God. And to not be able to do that just kind of throws everything out of norm. Making morals and ethics a fabric of their lives with the mentoring of their parents superseding any influence of schools, peers, or state, and the chances of them remaining faithful to God dramatically increase. Again, all I can do is draw from my own experience in the sense of when I was in the service, I found out, in fact, comparing notes with another young man that was in the same congregation, a little bit older, he went into the Air Force and I went in, the Marines. And I remember we both talked about it. You know, we're not, didn't think ourselves that well grounded in the faith, and we felt that we came up to a crossroads. You know, that now that you're in the world, that you always dreamed about getting away from mom and dad and away from church and all that kind of stuff, now that you're in it and you get a hard look at it and you realize this isn't, you know, all that it's cracked up to be. And it never is. When you start to look at it, you know, I remember my moment of truth is not being able to get a good night's sleep because the guys came in after a weekend partying, and again the next morning, and going into the restroom, and the place was a mess. I mean, there was vomit up and down the walls, into the urinals. A guy was going to take a shower. He was stark naked, sitting on the floor with his head in the toilet. That's the way he slept that night. And I look at it, I went, man, if this is the world, I don't want any part of it. And you start backstepping away from it, and you start thinking about things. And I can remember over in Japan when, I think there was something like 160 bars, the first mile outside the gate. I mean, there still wasn't enough to accommodate all the guys when they got leave. And so there's always sorts of fights. And I knew what went on because I did some shore duty, whatever, where you go and resurrect these guys off of the floors and stuff and throw them in a cab and get them back on base. And there were, women in all the bars, still not enough to go around. And I can remember one of the guys asking me, and I was surprised at my answer. He said, why don't you go out and do that stuff? And I stopped to think about it, and I said, well, first of all, I respect another human being, and I don't want to use them for my own gratification. I respect myself for having that kind of stance. I respect my God, and he tells me not to. That was good enough for him. He goes, oh, okay. So sometimes the people in the world just need a good reason, not to do the stuff they're doing and not going with the crowd. But, it gets ingrained. I mean, I was raised in the church. And whether I knew it or not, I was learning something. Okay? and developing some morals. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child on the way he should go, and even when he's old, he will not depart from it. Okay? That works both ways. I mean, Yasser Arafat, you know, realized that, you know, in fact, Sesame Street in Palestine was imbibing the young people with a hatred of Jews. I don't know how that guy ever won a Nobel Peace Prize. But that's what they're training the kids from the very, very young. Many armies, you know, Korean, North Korean, and others, are training kids very young, especially Africa and Syrian. And the last thing you want to run into is a 9-year-old with an Uzi. I mean, they have no conscience whatsoever. Older ones, you know, kind of have, you know, there's some kind of protocol, some kind of a little bit of sanity in them, some kind of conscience. But a 9-year-old that's been trained to do that, if you look at him wrong, he'll shoot you. You know, there's that lack of conscience in them. That's the bad side. The good side is if you start instilling them very young with morals and a respect for God, you know, that's going to be hard to break away from. And as parents, you really need to concentrate on dealing with that sort of thing. There's another obvious thing to be considered about parents. They need to be cool. Okay, I'm dating myself, I guess, but they need to be able to handle the discipline in a way that gets it done without aggravating the young person. Instruction should be handled in such a way that the young person really wants to learn. Nancy and I, you know, kind of got caught up in the television show. What is it? I forgot now. Fixer Upper. Thank you. And, you know, it's interesting to see that they flip houses. What's one even more interesting is the family unit of the Gaines. Especially, you know, Chip, he's the dad. And he goes into these houses, and some of them are really bad. And, you know, because they're old, they're more than 100 years old sometimes. You know, like, the whole thing is, we take the worst house on the block and make it somebody's dream home. And so he really gets in. In fact, he likes demo day. You know, for me, tearing apart a house, you know, like, it's the worst job ever. But it's his big day. He loves it. And the reason is because his dad instilled in him a means of finding something fun about any job you have to do. And you can see it. You know, they bring the kids in. The kids enthusiastically want to help out with everything. I mean, they don't know that, you know, they're not having fun, but they feel they are. You know, they're learning something without knowing they're learning it. You know, he's building into them a really good work ethic, a love of doing things, and that's the way we need to raise the kids, especially in serving God. You know, if you can, teach them without them being aware they're learning something. In Ephesians 6:4, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Notice the discipline in the instruction of the Lord is something that doesn't make the child angry. You know, that's an antithesis of making the child angry, provoking them. You know, if you do it according to the Lord's way, the right way, you know, they get discipline, they get nourished, you know, they get instruction, and they're not adverse to it. Another problem might be hypocritical parents. I mean, what we've been talking about are parents that are very enthusiastic about raising decent children. What if the parent isn't interested? One more thing about a parent. Your children know when you're not the same person Tuesday as you profess to be on Sunday. When they see a difference between practice and profession, they soon lose respect for their parents and the religion they profess. Many people are turned away from the church because of hypocrisy. The young will walk away too and justify it as the same way everybody else did. At least I'm not a hypocrite. By the way, a hypocrite is a Greek term for an actor, someone who wears the mask. Matthew 18:6. But whoever causes one of these little ones to believe in who believe in me, it is better for him that a heavy. But whoever causes one of these little ones who believe in me to stumble, it is better for him that a heavy millstone be hung around his neck and he be drowned in the depth of the sea. Okay, kids grow up kind of with enthusiasm for God. You know, it's fresh for them. You know, and they can easily express their love for God, and to quench that, especially by a parent, God is saying it's going to be one of the worst offenses you're ever going to do. What are the scribes and the Pharisees, hypocrites? You tithe the min and the dill and the cumin, that is, they focus on little things. And he goes on and says, well, you need to consider those too, but you leave off the weightier things, you know, like justice and mercy and faithfulness. And those are the big things to be instilled in kids and the people we work with. Also, we have to be careful of worldly friends. For good or bad, peer pressure is simply that, pressure. You know, it bears down on them. I use the illustration of a cattle stampede. More up to date. You probably kids, you know, I don't know what kids know what a cattle stampede is unless they watch City Slickers. But a more contemporary thing, when I was in the service, I took a motorcycle instruction class. And I don't remember too much from it except two statements that the drill instructors used. First of all, he said, if you've got a $10 head, buy a $10 helmet. What he's trying to get across is how precious is your head to you. You know, if you really want to save it, spend a little extra money and get a good quality piece of protection. Which gets down to another thing. You know, for the young people, who cares more about you than you? Protect yourselves. Be careful of the people you run around with. You know, how valuable are you to you? I mean, you just want to be something that's cast off the side of the road. Eventually in life, you see them go down dark alleys. There's drugs, you know, in the alleys. They're in the alley. They're in the gutters of the street. They're in castaway homes. Is that really the lifestyle you want? To be an addict or a drunk or someone who's not making it, that's sick all the time? Or do you want the most for yourself, the best for yourself? You have to make that decision. You know, put your efforts into improving your body, your mind, your spirit, to be the best possible person you can be for you, and then also for those around you. Especially if you're planning on getting married, you know, to take care of your spouse, your children, the government, the church, whatever, being an asset, the best possible asset you can be. The other part of that that drill instructor told us, which kind of goes along with this, because, I mean, nobody in their right mind would go and, you know, walk out into the flow of traffic on the freeway. So he said, if you are going down the freeway on your motorcycle and you dump it, you better come up running 65 miles an hour and in the right direction. Which means if you're not capable of doing that, be careful about the road you get on and what's all around you. You know, you have to be kind of circumspect. You know, self-defense really begins with being aware of your surroundings. And that's what a young person needs to be trained to do, to be aware. Everyone needs to consider the herd, crowd that they hang around with, especially young people. Charlie's statement again. If you're a Christian and you're trying to be a Christian and you know, you've got the old friends and you can't get them to come along. In fact, they may start to ridicule, mock you. I found out, when you're in the service, if they find out that you're trying to be a good boy, it just drives people nuts. I mean, the porno books get, shoved in your face. The language, takes off, worse and worse. You got to really defend yourself. So, if you can't change your friends, change your friends. Okay. I found out, the best friends to start cultivating is the old folks. I mean, it does anything that's, 5 years older than you and up is good to hang around. The really old people are cool. Out in the cabin, and most of the people I knew were like senior citizens and stuff like that. I tell you, anybody that's been through World War II, the Korean War, and some of the other things, they've got stories to tell. And some of them have been through some stuff that they'll never tell you. That's some of the weird things. Some of those that have been in the worst combat fights, they don't want to talk about it. It's like they've experienced enough of hell, they don't want to relive it. But you're going to read about it. You can read about the things they went through and respect what they've learned. If you're starting a business, go to the Small Business Bureau. It's stocked with people that are already retired, that have run businesses, and now want to help somebody else. That's the cool thing about older folks. They want to help. If they made a wealth, they'll show you how, they'll tell you how to duplicate that. They want to share that experience. For others, young married couples, if they're older than you are, learn from them. They'll give you some insights. I remember one couple that I talked to in the church. They were the coolest couple. I go, how do you be so really nice to one another? And they both looked at me and go, you have no idea the wars we went through before we worked it all out. they'll give you an insight into the experiences you're going to have to live through. Marriage is negotiation. All should know that there is a guilt also by association. Boy, I learned that young. Okay. One of the experiences, I remember we were up in a cul-de-sac, and I wasn't even with the rest of them. There was like four kids in the cul-de-sac, and I was up on a mound, kind of playing, all by myself. And they did, and what I could figure out is they found an old tire and decided to run it down the road and cause some guy to swerve or whatever, and they took off. And all I did was look up and see them take off. Okay, it's time to go home. And I took off running, and guess who the guy caught? And how can you explain, to somebody and your parents something you had no idea what went on? But guilty by association. 1 Corinthians 15:33, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. It'll get to you. Or Proverbs 24:1, do not be envious of evil men or desire to be with them. If you have to, be a loner. Go off on your own. Promote family togetherness with your home as a gathering place. Come up with wholesome entertainment that is supervised. Don't let the world dictate your traditions, which should be godly. I remember an incident of one family that was really a nice family. And one night they went to a football game. The oldest boy in the family was playing. And it just happened that their team won a very big meet. And afterwards, they were going to all go out and celebrate. It was like Friday night. And so he came running up the stands and said, hey, all the guys are going out for a little celebration. Can I go with them? And his dad looked at him and go, well, okay, yeah, you can go out with them. Yeah, we're going to go home and have some hot chocolate and, have a little family time. And the boy thought about it and he goes, can I come home with you? He'd rather be, a nice quiet time with the family and hot chocolate than with the guys he knew on the team. Evil influences then. We are surrounded by temptation in movies, TV, magazines, schools, office, social media, whatever. Some of that, if you can't handle it, stay out of it. Social media drags people into saying the stupidest things. For some reason, it's almost like Jackie Chan. If you've ever seen a Jackie Chan movie, would you ever be aware that, he's afraid of heights? I mean, he jumps from like cranes to cranes, kind of stuff like that. He just says, when the camera's rolling, he'll do anything. Without the camera, he rethinks it. But when that camera's rolling, he'll do the stupidest thing you ever ask him to do. It's just a situation. Social media seems to be the same thing. You get on social media and you start confessing things to thousands of people you'd never tell even your best friend in secret. And then, tell people, you profess to be a Christian. But the books that they have out there, some things, you get kind of jaded, but there's things to be aware of. I grew up with comic books, some of the first issues of Batman, the Detective comic books. I mean, the drawings are kind of simplistic, whatever. I'll tell you, some of the comic books they put out now are X-rated. I mean, some of these artists, the way they draw women and the fancy superhero costumes, as far as I know, women don't really look like that. That's a little boy's fantasy. And man, it kicks in, when the hormones are raging and everything else. Parents, be aware of what your kids are looking at. Reading, bringing home, hiding under the mattress, all that kind of stuff. If temptation were not a viable tool for luring people off into the world, the devil would have abandoned it a long time ago. The truth is, with our advanced technology, it is even more powerful than ever. 1 Thessalonians 5:22, abstain from every form of evil. Ephesians 5:11, do not participate in the unfruitful deeds of darkness, but instead even expose them. Now, this passage just says we have to be proactive. Understand why it's wrong so you can get out there and tell people this is wrong. This is evil. This is something we shouldn't be doing, and this is why. Proverbs 23:7, for as he thinks within himself, so is he. He says to you, eat and drink, but his heart is not with you. Taking the first part of that with the second, this pastor just said, okay, you've got a friend who goes, hey, he seems to be your good buddy. Let's go get drunk. Let's go ahead and have a good time. And do you really think he's your friend? This says, rethink it. There's something he wants out of it. And he's going to get you into a state where you're not capable of making decisions anymore. Lamentations 3:27, it is good for a man that he should bear the yoke in his youth. One of the things I respected most in some of the young people I grew up with, even in junior high, some of them had tough families, the loss of one of the parents or something like that. And I can remember one young man, fairly nice, kind of to himself, quiet. But he was, going to school, doing the best he could to make good grades, and he was working a job. I think he was working construction in junior high. And he didn't look like the rest of us anyway, because he had some muscles from what he was doing. But this was a young man, and I've known others like him, that had plans. Starting early, starting to do work, putting money in the bank, a sense of responsibility, you could see it. The teachers knew it. Even when they came in and their grades weren't that good, they knew that the person had been working out, the homework, late in the night, because they had that kind of ethic to them. It's good to get the young people started on that. It's in many cultures, African cultures, a kid's playing with toys one day, and then he reaches the age of 12 or manhood or whatever, and here's your spear, here's your shield, we're out hunting the lions with the big guys. Your adolescent period is like one day. In this country, adolescence lasts until you're 35. God is saying it's better if the child starts learning some things early and starts bearing the load and responsibility. It's good for them. To let a child do what they want, especially when their mind is not fully formed and they have little perspective of the world around them, is to abandon them to an undisciplined and unloving life. Okay? Even though they may kick at it every once in a while, the barriers are something they appreciate. They know there's somebody saying, don't go beyond that. I mean, a child that's left to fend for himself out on the street, you know, he may talk a good talk and they have a bravado about him, but in many cases, he's scared. And he would love somebody to love him enough to say, don't do that. You can go out. Those who do not know history are condemned to repeat it. A young mind doesn't know history. Doesn't know all the facts of how all the things could go wrong, what people have done in the past. Okay, that's a quote for the young. For the older ones, we learn from history that we never learn anything from history. Us old folks never learn. Even though we know the history, we still repeat it. You know, that's more frustrating to me than anything. No, as I'm old as I am, it's still making the same stupid mistakes. But you know, it's things we work at all our lives to discipline ourselves and try to do better. Also what can reach the child is church problems. Too many churches are filled with fussing. Most of it involves petty things, personalities, opinions, power struggles, cantankerousness. It not only turns young people away, but you know, many old ones too. Many preachers are run out, many good men are kept from being elders, and many young people do not understand what is going on, simply drift away because the church spirit is growing more with the world. Just some examples. I remember in Lake Elsinore, there was a young preacher there who was fairly knowledgeable and a good preacher. But there was a man in the congregation who wasn't a Christian for most. It was like he was a drunk, the truth. He had a sixth grade education. He worked mostly on the railroad and then finally decided to come back to the Lord because his wife, I guess, nagged him, whatever. But he wasn't, he wasn't the brightest crayon in the box. His reasoning, one thing he told me was, he said, there's got to be a mother in heaven. And I go, what? He goes, there's a father and a son. There's got to be a mother. Didn't understand the concept of the Hebrew term for son, something that has the same characteristics. But that's the way he thought. And he hounded this preacher so bad that the guy just decided he didn't want to put up with it and quit the ministry and went into insurance. And I've known of other preachers the same thing where, we have warnings to make sure that you support the elders. Don't make them go into the job, and regret it, whatever. But we don't seem to carry that over to the preachers we have too. And it's very easy for them to lose interest and want to go, hey, it's just not worth it. Especially if they get treated better in the secular world than they're treated in the church. Some of this other stuff, young people, I've known of, two places. San Diego, where a young couple was converted and were enthusiastic, wanted to convert other people and share the word with them. And the congregation kind of felt intimidated by it. And they grew angry and resentful of these people who were doing the Lord's work. I knew a place in Aliso Viejo, where there was a young couple that was brought, that were converted, and they had the joy of the Lord in them and were out talking to other people. And the men of the congregation called them in and told them, you can't do that. We didn't give you authority. You can't believe some of the things that go on at times. What were they thinking? But it's kind of stuff that turns people off. Galatians 5:15, but if you bite and devour one another, take care lest you be consumed by one another. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another even as I loved you. What part of that do you not understand? Our love to each other has to compare to how Christ loved. And finally, just a passing note, because I've known parents that, good parents. God-fearing people try to raise their children right. And still, something happened, and the child fell away. At some point, we have to be aware that it's not always our fault. You can be the best of parents, and yet the child grows and has to make his own choices. At some point, he has to decide. He's given free will by God. And hopefully, you've taught him how to make those good decisions. But sometimes, like the rest of us, they make bad decisions and get caught up and, you know, drawn away. They may come back, you know, if the training's there and ingraining. But consider for the moment that the Heavenly Father, he has loved us, cared for us, disciplined us, and guided us in the best possible ways. I mean, he's the source of how you bring up a child, how to do it right, how to do it lovingly, firmly, whatever. And yet most of his creation has chosen to go the way of the world. Okay. Is it his fault? No. Again, you know, from Adam on, men are given free will, and from the very beginning, a lot of times man chooses to do the wrong thing. So who is to blame? Solomon had everything. Good father in David, he had wealth, he had good teachers and mentors, you know, he knew God's word and everything, given wisdom by God, still fell away. Then you have Josiah. He's a mystery. Yeah, here's a kid whose father was Ahab, his grandfather was Manasseh, two of the worst people that ever grew up in Israel. And at the age of 8, he decides to dedicate himself to the Lord and turned out to be the best king they had since the time of Samuel. Free will means we all are accountable for our own choices. You can't blame it on society. You can't blame it on the pressures. You can't say the devil made me do it. You know, all the cop-outs that we choose, it still comes down to you've got a choice. And even if it's under the worst circumstances, you still have a choice to do the right thing. And God expects you to make that choice. And it depends on what kind of character you've decided you want to be, what sort of integrity you want to have in this life. For each one shall bear his own load. Okay, that means you have a responsibility. And God will give you enough to make sure that you grow up. If you accept it, and you'll be a good person. That's what discipline is for. But too often we choose not to. What we're hoping is that we will all make the good choice. This is one of the reasons why we come to services, to help one another, to fend against the pressures of the world, to be encouragement to one another, not forsaking the assembly of the saints, but making sure that we are loving, encouraging one another in order to grow, to stimulate one another to love and good deeds. I mean, that's the purpose of the church. Yeah, that's the vital need of the church. And whatever we can do to help one another, to encourage one another, to be there for one another, to guide one another and teach one another, you know, it's all part of God's plan. So if there's anything we can do to help you keep on the right track and make the good decisions, please let us know as we stand to sing.